From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Three Americans killed in Gaza yesterday, Palestinian terrorists still on the offensive, Israel still retaliating, still assassinating, still building settlements in the occupied West Bank, and the much-heralded roadmap to peace in complete disarray. But a new plan is set to be signed in Switzerland November 4th, the so-called Geneva Accord. Its signatories, Israelis and Palestinians, have absolutely no power to implement this plan. They are not premiers or heads of state, but their goal is to walk a path toward peace that officials might one day follow. Their negotiated plan is surprisingly detailed. It asks for major concessions from both Israelis and Palestinians. Israelis would withdraw from large parts of the West Bank and Gaza Strip. Palestinians would give up the right of return to Israel. And Jerusalem would be divided. Israeli officials have denounced the initiative as pathetic and shameful. Washington has ignored it. Yasser Arafat has expressed mild, non-committal interest. But the authors of the symbolic pact insist that they will keep hope of peace alive even if the powers that be are locked in conflict. Tonight on Point, the Geneva Accord's chief architects share their solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Earlier today, I spoke with two of the plan's chief architects. Joining me from Tel Aviv is Yossi Beilin. He is head of the Israeli team negotiating the Geneva Accord and a member of the Knesset, Israel's parliament. He is former justice minister and a leading liberal voice in Israel. Hello and welcome, Yossi Beilin.
Thank you.
And joining me from Ramallah in the West Bank is Yasser Abed Rabo, head of the Palestinian team negotiating the Geneva Accord. He is Minister of Cabinet Affairs for the Palestinian Authority. He participated in both the Madrid and Oslo peace talks. When the Palestinian Authority was established in 1994, he led its information ministry. Hello and welcome, Yasser Abed Rabo.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Yasser Abed Rabo, if I may go to you first. Why these talks? You've been meeting government officials, former government officials, academics, all meeting in Jordan, working on the draft of a 50-page document that is not official, that has no government sanction. Why are you doing it?
Well, we started after Taba negotiations had stopped in the beginning of the year 2000. There was a deadlock in the negotiations at that time, and we felt that it is our duty, me and UC and others, to continue these talks and to finish all the issues that were not resolved. We thought that in order to address the Israeli public and the Palestinian public, we should convince them that there is a chance to reach at a final settlement, a settlement that will resolve all the thorny issues, including the issues of refugees, Jerusalem, settlements, borders, security between us. Our aim is to say that there is a win-win formula instead of the formula which we are witnessing now on the ground, where each side is trying to enforce his conditions on the other. We want to say to the public that there is a way to get out of this cycle of violence by sitting at around the table of negotiations. And there is a plan, a concrete plan, a detailed one, where each side will guarantee his own basic interests. And instead of the formula which wants to say that the only way is to replace the other, we want to say the only way is to coexist with the other.
And Yossi Beilin, if I may, let me turn to you. We have all watched over many years as top officials in all of these groups, including the presidents of the United States, Bill Clinton and George W. Bush most recently, have sat down at Camp David and elsewhere with great effort and tried to come to an agreement. If those leaders, with all of their power and their authority as representative officials of their nations, couldn't come to an agreement, how can you come to a serious agreement?
First of all, it is a fact. Second, we are the same people. We are the people who negotiated in Taba officially just 3 years ago. And we, as Mr. Abed Rabo said, felt we were very close to an agreement, but we didn't have enough time to conclude the work. I think that the Camp David summit in July 2000 was in many ways premature and wrong. The three parties were not ready for this summit. The negotiations were not serious enough because of the fact that people were not prepared for them. And I think that now we are ripe. We are ripe for an agreement with Norway. We have worked on it for 3 years intensively, on maps, on very detailed maps, on very, very concrete solutions in order to prove to each other that we have a plan, we have a partner, we can sign. It is not a situation whereby in the last moment one partner or another is running away. We are committed, we are taking the responsibility, and it is more than anything else an educational exercise to prove that it is possible and to ask the leaderships of both sides to follow this example and try to sign an agreement before it is too late.
Are you on track to sign this agreement in Geneva, Switzerland on November 4th?
We actually signed the letter to the Swiss foreign minister. We don't need now an official signing ceremony. What we need is to inaugurate our efforts and to tell the world that we found solutions for all the delicate issues in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Yossi Beilin, the Israeli government has been very critical of your work in this. They've called this irresponsible freelance diplomacy. The Deputy Prime Minister, Ehud Olmert, said that this was very grave and pathetic, that some of the concessions were shameful, that this is a pretense, a kind of impersonation that will get in the way of real peace efforts. What's your response to that?
My response to it is that yesterday morning, the most popular paper in Israel, Idiot Achronot, published the public opinion poll on our plane. We got 39%. To go from 40% to 51% is not too difficult. I believe that many, many people, although it is not a majority, I admit, but many, many people are thirsty for an agreement, are sick and tired of the current situation, of the vicious circle of violence, of terrorism and retaliation and revenge, and would like to see an end to it and save their own souls and their children. And we are suggesting something serious. Maybe a rightist government is very afraid of it because we are telling them that they are wrong, that there is a partner, that there is a plan, that we can have peace, that we don't have to continue the current situation whereby about 1,000 Israelis were killed and an intifada and many thousands of Palestinians. And I believe that they should understand that they should join us rather than criticize us.
And Yasser Abed-Rabo, we'll turn to the details in just a moment, but let me put to you, we have seen again and again Palestinian militants, terrorists, seemingly ready to use violence to blow up progress toward peace. With that kind of militancy, that kind of violence at the ready, do you see a real willingness or openness on the Palestinian side to accept something that's never been accepted in the past?
Well, President Bush declared his vision that he wants to see a solution by the year 2005 where a Palestinian state will be created side by side with Israel. This vision is very important, but it's not enough. Our work was a complementary to this vision. We wanted to fill the gap in this vision, which is we introduced a detailed plan because we want to see by the year 2005 a real solution, a solution that is accepted by both sides. Let me tell you that the majority of the Palestinian population, the majority of the Palestinian political forces had supported the vision of President Bush. But now we are saying that this vision could be implemented, and this vision could include a real Palestinian state with real borders, with real sovereignty, with a real capital, and with a prospect for development in the future. This is the main idea. And that's why we believe that by introducing this plan to the Palestinian public, yes, we will be able to convince them, although we acknowledge that it is a very difficult and complicated process. Let me tell you that right now, And a few hours ago, we had a meeting for the Palestinian leadership. Mm. And the Palestinian leadership had issued a statement, which is led, of course, this leadership by President Arafat. They issued a statement in which they had welcomed our efforts, and they expressed the hope that these efforts will go forward in order to reach at a concrete solution. So we are on the right path. We face difficulties. We face opposition from the extremists in both sides. They accuse us of being pathetic, but I believe that the only pathetic thing is the continuation of this cycle of violence, the retaliation, the revenge, the building of an apartheid wall around the Palestinian populated areas in order to turn them into pockets and to prevent the fulfillment of the vision of President Bush to establish a contiguous Palestinian independent state side by side with the state of Israel. This is the condition right now.
Yossi Beilin, so it's symbolic. It's a draft peace agreement. It may never be picked up by authorities. We don't know. But take us in to the broad outline of the details. I know it's 50 pages of very detailed text here, but paint the picture of what this agreement would seek to establish some years down the road. What does it look like?
We are speaking about a solution, of course, of two states, the Palestinian state and Israel. The capital of Israel will be Jerusalem with the Jewish neighborhoods in the east side. The capital of Palestine will be East Jerusalem. The Haram Sharif, the Temple Mount, will be under the Palestinian sovereignty. All the regulations, the current status quo will continue, and there will be an international presence on this place. The Wailing Wall will be under the Israeli sovereignty. The Old Jerusalem will be an open city. Jerusalem itself will be divided. Speaking about the territory, we are getting back to the original situation of 1967 with minor modifications, which will enable Israel to annex about 2.5% or 3% of the West Bank with more than 100,000 settlers who will, for the first time, will be under the Israeli sovereignty. And we will compensate the Palestinians with an area which is adjacent to the Gaza Strip so that they will have exactly 22% of the land of Israel or Palestine to the west of the Jordan River.
And Yossi Beilin, what about Israeli settlements in the West Bank and Gaza Strip?
Most of them will be dismantled. In Gaza, all of them will be dismantled. Some of them, adjacent to the old 67 borders, will remain there and will become under the Israeli sovereignty.
And
think about the refugees, which is the other delicate issue.
This is Palestinian refugees and the right of return.
Right. Here we are suggesting five options to the refugees as their place of permanent residence, besides, of course, compensation for their assets. We are suggesting to the Palestinians, the Palestinian state itself, which will welcome all of them. We are suggesting to them the swap territory, which Israel will give them in exchange for our annexation. We suggest to them their host countries, where there will be a process of rehabilitation, speaking about Jordan, of course, and other countries. The fourth option is the third countries, countries like the United States itself, maybe Canada, Australia, and others, which will host them if they wish so. And Israel, under its own sovereign decision, will accept a symbolic number of refugees.
Yossi Beilin, we've got to take a short break right there. Please stand by. We're talking tonight with Yossi Beilin in Tel Aviv and Yasser Abed Rabo in Ramallah about a symbolic peace plan, the Geneva Accord, being hammered out by unofficial representatives of the Israelis and Palestinians. We'll take your phone calls in just a few minutes at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about a symbolic peace plan that has been hammered out by Israelis and Palestinians, not those sitting at the pinnacle of power in either of their governments, in either of their societies, but men and women who have been close to the negotiations in positions of power for many years, have seen the two groups get close to peace and fall away from peace, have seen them fall into the terrible violence that's really taken over since the roadmap proposed by Washington, D.C. and others has completely fallen apart. They're saying, we can do better. And they've laid out a 50-page document, greatly detailed, called the Geneva Accord, that is, in essence, a peace plan in waiting when and if the Israelis and Palestinian governments are prepared to pick it up. My guests tonight are the chief negotiators in those conversations that have been going on for some time, most recently just this past weekend in Jordan, where final details were being established. Yossi Beilin joins us from Tel Aviv. He's former Israeli justice minister, a member of the Knesset, and a leading liberal voice in Israel. And from Ramallah in the West Bank, Yasser Abed Rabo. He is former Palestinian Authority information minister and was head of the Palestinian team negotiating the so-called Geneva Accord. Yossi Beilin, you know the kind of criticism that there's been from the Israeli government. Even Ehud Barak, who went very far toward negotiating an agreement with the Palestinians, has called this a delusional peace plan. Is there something delusional at the heart of this?
Well, I really believe that Ehud Barak was the pioneer who paved the way for many of us by breaking taboos, like agreeing to accept Palestinian sovereignty on the Temple Mount, like agreeing to have an exchange of territory, like dividing Jerusalem, and so on and so forth. I regret the fact that he's criticizing our agreement, and I hope that eventually he will come on board, because I'm sure that in his heart he is one of us, and he believes that only such a solution can save us. I regret the criticism which is there, but I am not in a situation of bickering. I don't want to refer even to the situation whereby somebody like Mr. Sharon himself, who is now the prime minister, when he was the head of the opposition, and when we negotiated in a very, very delicate situation in 2000, his decision was to have this provoking visit on Temple Mount, which triggered the Intifada later on. I don't think that it was exactly something which was in consultation with the government of the day, with our government, and the harm which was caused is really endless. So I don't think that we should argue with each other. The only question is whether our agreement is something which is worthwhile or not, whether Palestinians and Israelis are ready to pay this price, or whether we say, since it is such an expensive price, we prefer not to have this. This is the real question, rather than whether Mr. Sharon or Mr. Olmert or Mr. Barak are criticizing us or not.
And by expensive price, you mean all the bloodshed that we've all witnessed over so many years now. Yasser Abed Rabo in Ramallah, describe then for us a scenario by which this plan could actually come into effect. You know how deep the vested interests are on each side. You know how armed and angry elements of both these populations are. You've seen, you know, in your own population, suicide bombers ready to die and large terrorist organizations ready to fight. How do you take it from this hypothetical symbolic status that it has now and make these Geneva Accords real?
Look, we are not amateurs. We are professional politicians and leaders. I am a member in the Palestinian leadership. I was and I am still a member, which is the Palestinian Executive Committee of the PLO.
Fair enough.
And I was a member in this executive committee for over 35 years. And I know my people. I know every single Palestinian organization and leader personally. I know that the aspirations of my people, the majority, the vast majority, is to end the Israeli occupation, to establish a peaceful Palestinian independent state, and to give a chance which we did not have.
But Clinton failed, Arafat failed, Barak failed, George W. Bush failed. How will you succeed with this? We grant that you know the ropes, but how do you make it happen?
We did not fail. I don't think that anybody had failed. I believe we, the Palestinians and the Israelis, we were not courageous enough to fill the gaps. And in certain cases, we wanted the others to do the job for us. Now we will do the job for ourselves, and we will tell the others, even the President of the United States, we will tell the others who want to support the peace process, here we are. We answered all the questions that were left unanswered, whether in Camp David or after Camp David.
Let me ask you, Yasser Abdurabo, could this be implemented with Ariel Sharon and Yasser Arafat in power?
Well, I think that this is a real question. We are depending on a main thing. We want to convince the two public opinions that this is the only viable solution. They speak about us that maybe we are dreamers, but we are not. We are very realistic. The question we are raising in the face of all the leaders on both sides, do you have a better plan? Do you have other plan? Please introduce it to the public. Show what you have. The only plans we see are the plans for the continuation of this conflict, and it will be endless. I believe to start with a 40% in Israel supporting this plan, in the first day we declared it, even the public did not know the details, did not see the full text of the agreement. This is a real beginning and a great achievement. On the other hand, we are asking independent institutions to make polls among the Palestinian people, and I'm sure that we will get a real majority. On this we depend, and through democratic means, through patient methods of convincing different political institutions, I believe we will be able to change the situation. Let me tell you something. When we started this project, me and Yossi Beilin alone. Now we are not alone. I'm receiving every moment phone calls from people whom I thought in the past that maybe they will not pay attention to what we are doing, whether they are Palestinians or and Israelis. And they say, we support you. We are ready to do everything in order to fill and implement the project and the plan that you had reached at. It's a good beginning, but the way ahead of us is still long and very difficult.
We can only imagine. Yossi Beilin, if this accord should somehow rise up, should swell up on public opinion, demanding that it be considered, and it gets scrutinized, and it really gets down to the short hairs here, what are the details where, in your view, this might still founder? I mean, you've got a kind of a hard-headed because you've got experience, but sweetness and light because you're not in the real arena at the moment. If it gets in the real arena, are there still insoluble details that you think have not or will not be accepted?
Well, since we have solved all the issues in our agreement, I believe that there is no need to reopen these issues and to negotiate again, although, of course, this will be the right of the future negotiators. Of course, the main issues are Jerusalem and the refugees. The big package, the deal which has been agreed upon, is the Temple Mount on the one hand. This is the biggest concession on the Israeli side. And the issue of the refugees is the concession on the Palestinian side. These are the two big issues. But I believe that our compromise was not an unfair one. I think that it is the fairest solution for the Palestinian refugees, and I think that Israelis will be allowed to visit now the Temple Mount much more than today. I think that only when they have peace, they can move in Jerusalem, they can feel there at home, they can go to the holy places, and both people will really feel a kind of a win-win. I'm not excluding a possibility that those issues, which are the most delicate one, will be reopened by the future negotiators, although I will recommend not to do that.
And the same question to you on current leadership. I mean, Israel went to the polls, and Ariel Sharon was put right back in office, and by a fair margin. Could a plan like this, could this plan be implemented with Ariel Sharon and Yasser Arafat in power?
Well, to tell you the truth, I believe that both people deserve better leaders. But this is the situation. And I think that you must play on the playground, which is there. They are there. And our role is to convince them to accept the kind of an agreement we have signed on. I think that we should never give up on the leadership, but convince them, and our best tool is the public opinion. What Mr. Abadabo said is very true. If there is public opinion which is supportive of our project, no leader will be able to ignore it.
Yossi Beilin, Yasser Abed-Rabo, I don't know where this will go, but your stick-to-itiveness, your determination and vision is an inspiration. We thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yossi Beilin spoke with me from Tel Aviv. He is head of the unofficial Israeli team negotiating the Geneva Accord and a member of the Knesset, Israel's parliament. He's former justice minister and a leading liberal voice in Israel. Yasser Abed-Rabo spoke with us from Ramallah. He is head negotiator for the unofficial Palestinian team working on the so-called Geneva Accord. He is minister of cabinet affairs for the Palestinian Authority. And now we turn to you. Are these dreamers or the only ones right now with a real path toward peace? When you hear 67 borders, settlements withdrawn, Jerusalem divided, are you ready to sign on or run away from the Geneva Accord? And how can genuine peace seekers elbow past men with guns and hardline agendas? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New York is Henry Siegman, director of the U.S. Middle East Project at the Council on Foreign Relations. He is former executive director of the American Jewish Congress and a close observer of Israeli and Palestinian politics. Good evening and welcome, Henry Siegman.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. Also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack. You were listening there.
Hello, Tom. Yes, I was.
As we all were, a big ambition, far from power.
Yes, and you know, here was the missing horizon of political hope that we just haven't had there for so long, fitfully with the Bush announcement. And that's one horizon. On the other horizon, what do we see? A possible wider Mideast war with action between Israel and Syria. There have already been some war of words following a bombing and, you know, a possible preemptive strike by Israel against Iran if the Iranian nuclear capabilities proceed. That's on, and desperate terrorism, years and years of this thing. That's on the other horizon. You know, these Geneva Accords remind me of the Paris Accords of 1972. We, the United States, accepted terms then more favorable to the North Vietnamese than we rejected in 1969. So 4 years passed, and 20,000 Americans had to die, 100,000 South Vietnamese, and nearly 500,000 North Vietnamese before that those terms could finally be carried out. I just hope to God nothing like that happens here.
Well, but it would be so easy. Henry Siegman, when you listen to Yossi Beilin and Yasser Abed-Rabo, when you read about what's going on with this accord, I mean, this is very far from something that Ariel Sharon is ready to sign on to, and despite the noises from Yasser Arafat, you know, one can only imagine that it's not anything he's likely to pick up real quick. What do you make of all this?
Well, several thoughts. First, this clearly, and forgive me if I sound overly pedantic, this clearly is not a symbol. It is rather a real peace plan. It is not a peace agreement. An agreement can only be made by governments. Which brings us, of course, to the question you raise. How will the official governments, which is to say Sharon on the one hand and Yasser Arafat on the other, how will they deal with this? Now, the one thing, I certainly celebrate this initiative, and I have tremendous respect for both the Palestinians and the Israelis who participated in it. But the one thing that I find unconvincing is Yossi Beilin's optimism, or even if he isn't optimistic about it, but his sense that we have no choice, we have to try to get Israel's government, which is to say Sharon and his extreme right-wing coalition members, to buy into this. That, I believe, is just simply dreaming. There is no possibility under God's sun that this particular government, this Israeli government, and this Israeli prime minister, most importantly, will ever agree to a peace agreement that resembles the outline that we have heard of this plan. It'll never happen.
So then connect the dots for us here. Sharon was reelected not so very long ago by a significant margin of Israeli voters. At the same time, Yossi Beilin says, hey, we've got almost 40% support for this, and we're not even out of the gate yet. How does that math add up?
This is how you connect the dots. The audience, the target for this plan is not Sharon and his government. It must be the Israeli public. And if, in fact, they are able to sell the Israeli public on this plan, then there will have to be another government. Israel prides itself on being a democracy. And what this means is that when you have a government that does not represent on so crucial and existential an issue, the will of the people replace the government.
But the people just voted. But the people just voted Sharon in again. So does it mean that, despite what they found in whatever polling they just did, that the Israeli public, in fact, is afraid and wants a hard-line, tough position, policy against the Palestinians?
Well, the Israeli public may want a tough line today based on certain assumptions about the Palestinians and about Arafat. Most importantly, the Israeli public has been led to believe, and I think that Yasser Arafat is largely responsible for that, that Arafat is not to be trusted, and that he is a man who, despite what he may say to newspapers and statesmen, basically he does not accept a Jewish state as a state of the Jewish people. That this is something, and the right wing has been saying this over and over again, Arafat will never accept that. And unfortunately, even Barak, after his disappointment, after the failure of Camp David, is saying the same thing.
So is there room for public opinion among Israelis or Palestinians to swell up in support of a plan like this, or is it simply blocked by fear and by leadership?
Yes, there is, if it becomes clear that this very important feature of this particular plan, which is a Palestinian recognition for the first time of the legitimacy of the state of Israel as the state of the Jewish people, if this is embraced unqualifiedly by Arafat. He has never been willing to say that. Now, the challenge to Yossi Beilin, the question that I would ask him and his colleagues, he's not alone in this enterprise, how do you get Arafat to confirm this? Arafat has made pleasant noises about this plan.
Right.
And he has said he can't go into the details. It's not an official plan and has to be negotiated, etc. All of this is true. But there's absolutely no reason in the world why he cannot say, I fully accept the principle enunciated in this plan that the state of Israel is the state of the Jewish people.
Henry Siegel, stand by. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back. We're talking about a peace plan in waiting, an unofficial plan being lofted by Israelis and Palestinians. You can join the conversation, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about a peace plan in waiting for the Middle East, an unofficial plan being lofted by Israelis and Palestinians in hopes of ending bloodshed and building popular support for peace. It's called the Geneva Accord. No government has signed on to it, but it's out there, 50 pages, lots of detail. We spoke earlier with Yossi Beilin from Tel Aviv and Yasser Abed Rabbo from Ramallah, two main negotiators on this unofficial project. We're joined right now from New York by Henry Siegman, director of the U.S. Middle East Project, the Council on Foreign Relations, and former executive director of the American Jewish Congress. You can join the conversation as well. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Here's a peace plan being pounded out by people out of frustration in the hope that it might somehow be lofted up on public opinion, but no officials have signed on. Neil's calling from Swampscott, Massachusetts. Hi, Neil. You're on the air.
Hi. Recalling some previous conversations with Professor Talhami, it's a statement more than a question, is that I see this as a clear continuation, and it is an expression of not only the official Israeli democracy, but the democracy of the Palestinian public. I do believe they will get behind the plan, and although Arafat is not elected in the Western democratic sense, he's only there because the public wants him to be there.
So what makes you so sure people behind the plan, if they've elected Ariel Sharon, if they've held up Yasser Arafat, neither of them are real gung-ho on this, why do you think it will happen?
Both publics are starving for peace. They're highly motivated to reach a peace. And if someone can present them with a viable plan that can bring them there, the public will follow it. Now, I don't know the details, but it sounds to me like it is the sort of plan that can receive that kind of backing.
Even if the violence continues?
The violence will have to be controlled, and that will only happen if the Palestinian public are behind it strong enough that they won't let that violence continue, and they can make that happen.
Well, that's a big prospect. And, Neil, thanks for your call. Henry Siegmund, can you see violent forces being brought into control? Let aside the political issue for a moment, but just the violent forces being brought to heel long enough for something like this to take root?
I think the Palestinian public will disapprove of violence if they see there is a serious peace process underway that can lead to the achievement of a viable Palestinian state along the lines described in this initiative. If they do not see U.S. support and international support for this kind of an initiative, and they also have to deal with a government, an Israeli government, that clearly rejects it, they will not support a suppression of terrorist violence.
So put the fruit out there first. Lay out clearly, even I don't know, do you even advance to these new borders before security is established? That reverses the kind of dynamic that's been championed recently. The mantra has been security first, and then we move forward. Can that be reversed?
Well, the position that Prime Minister Sharon has taken until now is that you cannot discuss any kind of political outcomes until all terrorism ends. And that, of course, is a prescription for endless terrorism. What Israel has to do, what I suspect Prime Minister Sharon will not do, and this is why I speak of another government having to come in before there's a real prospect for peace, but what Israel has to do is to say, we won't tolerate terrorism, we will have to fight terrorism, but we will put on the table the clear prospect of a nonviolent path to the achievement of legitimate Palestinian goals. That is what this plan does.
Giora's calling from Postville, Iowa. Hi, Giora. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call, Tom.
Sure.
I have a few comments. Number one, I think that Yossi Beilin, once again, even after he lost the election, you know, the Labour Party lost the election.
Yes.
And he sank to the lowest level on politics in Israel, once again went on the back of the government signing agreements that we saw that they never accomplished nothing but more killing and more killing and more killing.
So you agree with the Israeli government? You see this as a kind of problem, as a kind of even betrayal in some sense of Israel?
Something like that. I mean, if you have a channel of a negotiation, you don't go behind your boss, you know, and stab him on the back and then negotiate your own terms.
So what should Yossi Beilin be doing? Should he just wait for Ariel Sharon to lead things to peace? What if he doesn't believe Ariel Sharon will do that?
He should go and ask forgiveness for every widow and every orphan that died because of the Oslo and all the accords that he made. This is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, people have to see history. History shows that the Arab people that had Jerusalem or the West Bank never allow Jewish people to visit holy sites. Okay, that's the truth. You couldn't visit the cave of the Patriarchs in Hebron. You couldn't sit on the Western Wall. They made your life miserable.
So if sovereignty there is handed over, that's the end of Jewish access, in your view, Giora?
The temple is a Jewish place. What I'm talking about, reality, not about. If people want to believe something else, is the own choice.
Giora, we've got it. Our time is short. Let us pick up just those two. Henry Siegmund, you hear the critique. First of all, Yossi Beilin's Labour Party didn't win the election, so what's he doing here? And secondly, a lack of confidence that the that in fact Palestinians would allow Jews to continue to have access to holy sites that might be given up under this plan?
Well, the first point, I must say, brings a smile to my face, because I recall very clearly when I was the executive head of the American Jewish Congress, the Likud party, that is the government that is now in power, decided under a labor government when Rabin, Prime Minister Rabin, was the prime minister, to open up an office in Washington and to send Likud operatives there to work against the policies of the democratically elected prime minister of Israel.
Now, that's an interesting point. I mean, even to the point, Jack Beatty, we've spoken before about, and this would be a bit off to the side, but Netanyahu, ordering up a little consultation from some folks in the U.S. Pentagon now about a grand plan that it would include taking Saddam Hussein down.
Yes.
Well,
excuse me. No, go right ahead.
No. I'm sorry. Go right ahead.
I was just going to say, yes. I mean, that came out that Richard Perle and others were consulting with the Likud while the Oslo process was going on with a way to get around the onerous part of Oslo, which was land for peace. They wanted the peace, but not by sacrificing the land.
So you're saying, Henry Siegman, there's precedent for this. Likud has worked its own agenda when it wasn't in power, too.
Yes, indeed. And did so in an official way by establishing formal offices and designating official representatives in order to undermine the policies of an elected government. At the time, I recall, I said they have the right to do so. It may not be the proper thing to do for political or other reasons. But certainly in a democratic society, people can do these kinds of things. But the Likud has a very short memory when it comes to these kinds of things.
And what about our caller's concern that if, in fact, sovereignty is handed over at holy sites in Jerusalem and perhaps elsewhere, that will be the end of Jewish access to these sites? Historically, that was a real problem, a real issue. Many people consider this a really central problem if they can't have that hard-won access.
Well, the issue of access is a serious one, but this agreement specifically provides for an international presence in the Old City in order to assure that access and to see to it that the parties do not renege on their commitments.
So that would be some kind of guarantee, blue helmets or something like it, around
like
the holy
that,
sites.
Right.
Wynn is calling from Franklin, Massachusetts. Hi, Wynn. You're on the air.
Hi.
Good evening.
I just wanted to say that I'd love to see this happen, but I don't think it can, and simply because the Palestinian government hasn't demonstrated the centralized control over the militant groups that would be necessary in order to stop the violence. I mean, as we've said, if the violence doesn't stop, the no plan is going to succeed. And each time there's a ceasefire, it seems like a radical militant Palestinian group breaks it. And I don't think the Palestinians have the control over those groups to make the peace work.
Henry Siegman, can you speak to that? And thanks for your call, Wynn. Henry Siegman.
Well, I fully agree that as long as there is the kind of terrorism that we have seen that blows up innocents on the streets of Jerusalem and Tel Aviv and Haifa, no peace plan, no matter how compelling, will receive serious Israeli consideration by the Israeli public. But that's precisely why it is important for Palestinians and Israelis to express themselves on these very important issues, to hold out a vision that persuades their respective publics that an agreement is possible, because this then removes, with respect to Palestinian terrorism, this is the only thing that will remove Palestinian public support for the terrorists.
But are the violent factions so deeply rooted that public opinion can't root them out? That they're autonomous, really, and without end?
No. The interesting thing is that Hamas, for example, which is the most important sponsor of terrorism, Hamas will not proceed with terrorism if the Palestinian street does not support it. There was a time for 3 years during the Oslo Accords when Hamas stopped completely its sponsorship of terrorism because the Palestinian street believed during that three-year period that they were in fact on the road to a Palestinian state. It was only when they lost complete confidence in the process, rightly or wrongly, but when they lost confidence in the process, that Hamas felt that they could return to terror.
Not easy to hit the off switch on that violence, but maybe. Mike is calling from Alston, Massachusetts. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi. Good evening.
Good evening.
Question. Well, I was calling in with a Palestinian-American perspective, really, which is mixed feelings on the plan that I've been hearing about. And on the one hand, I feel like the truest, most just solution would be for the refugees to be allowed to return home, where people could live in one state regardless of their religion or their ethnic background, anything like that.
Should Palestinians hold out for that, Mike, even now?
I know that it's not realistic. I know that Jews in Israel would never sacrifice the Jewish identity of their country. Mm-hmm. So I feel like this is the next best thing. This is my sacrifice and the sacrifice that the Palestinian people realize that they're going to have to make. And I think the reason that they are going to do that is because they really aren't the ones in control here. The Israeli power is in control of this situation, and I think that they feel like, boy, we have to take this because it's the only good thing we're going to get.
But if there were an opening, Mike, can you imagine Palestinian public opinion swelling up to support something like this to such an extent that it pushed violence to the side, pushed it off the stage?
I think that if they felt like they actually could trust the Israeli government and felt like the government were taking steps to show that they could coexist with a Palestine and even events like the wall just completely demonstrates to the Palestinian people that the Israeli government can't be serious about making peace, because how could they if they're building this wall not along the 67 border?
But deep in the West Bank. Mike, thanks for your call. Henry Siegman, we've talked a lot tonight about what might be. In your view, what is actually going on right now in terms of peace and perhaps war in this region?
Well, unfortunately, the so-called roadmap is not in a state of pause, as the White House and the State Department have described it, but it's just dead. It is inoperative. And even at the very first steps called for by the roadmap have not been implemented. So the current situation is one that is incredibly dangerous. And for all of the tragedy that we've seen, I think there's only the prospect of far greater bloodshed, destruction, and tragedy.
Is there an event that could turn it around? Can something like just signing this agreement turn it around? What could switch tracks here?
One of the persons, there is an individual who can play a major role in preventing this kind of downward cycle of violence, and that is the President of the United States. Unfortunately, he has essentially taken himself out of the peace process after at first promising to be deeply engaged and to, in an even-handed manner, see to it both sides implement the roadmap. He has taken himself out, so he cannot change that around. At this point, it is only people like Yossi Beilin, which is to say Israelis and Palestinians, by doggedly pursuing initiatives such as these, getting both sides to make statements that are credible and that can deeply affect public opinion, that could hope to change the situation.
Henry Siegman, it's been great having you tonight. Thank you very much for your perspective.
Thank you for having me.
Henry Siegman, director of the U.S. Middle East Project, the Council on Foreign Relations, and former executive director of the American Jewish Congress. Jack, that sounds like a call for a kind of people's peace effort.
Well, we've seen it before, but it's hard to imagine it with Sharafat in control. That's Amos Oz's term for Arafat and Sharon. He was one of the architects of this plan.
And yet, there they are. Jack, thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.